Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Welcome to Mission Watch Live, another Messiah's Branch National Satellite Radio Program. We are broadcasting from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is January 22nd, 2015. Folks, with Mission Watch Live, we are warning the world as it happens. If you need help with anything after this program, please call me. If you need a prayer, you can call me for that also. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request or message. I will call you back at some point when I get... Anyway, I will call you back. If you have an emergency and you get the answering machine, call my cell phone number, 316-619-4886, 316-619-4886. Please remember I said an emergency, and try to hit it after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because I usually don't turn it on until around 1 or so. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and be respectful, I say, before, 8 o'clock at night. But you can use it. You can always find updates with the breaking news, our ministry, and our radio. Start to say robot. Anyway, radio program archives and our mailing address, all at our blog, which is simply prophecyhour.com. Prophecyhour.com. I'm in a good mood because I know what guest is on tonight. And anyway, but our archives can be found at prophecyhour.com and branch.podomatic.com. Both are very smartphone friendly. In fact, at branch.podomatic.com, they have an Apple app and an Android app. So, go over there and get it, because I hear that 50% of the people out there now listen to radio programs on their smartphones. So go get the app and put it on your smartphone, and I challenge you to share these radio programs with 2 or 3 other people. Okay, now prayer will bring on tonight's guest with probably several real interesting topics. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, I pray. Father, I pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not my will, nor my guess. So please give everyone out their ears in which to hear the truth and discern the truth. In Yeshua's name, amen and amen. Well, lately we've heard talk of, there are no-go zones, in Paris and Europe. And then we heard Fox was going to get sued over saying it. And then we heard Fox say, there are no-go zones, And then others have came forward and said, yes, there are. Well, that seems to be going back and forth. But I got one of my favorite guests on with us tonight to sort it out. And he's really good at sorting things out. Here to sort all that out much more is Ben Berry. Ben is an investigative talk show host and also works with Waleed Shubat, which you all know is an ex-Palestinian terrorist or ex-Mother and Muslim Brotherhood terrorist, whatever way you want to call it. You can find his work and Waleed's work, of course, at shubat.com. That's shubat.com. That's like your shoe and then a bat.com. He's the author of 2 books so far, unless he's wrote something I don't know about, Unsung Davids and Islamophobia, which he co-wrote with Waleed Shubat. So let's welcome Ben on. Are you there with me, Ben?
And we are we are actually in the process of writing another book.
You're writing another book?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. What was it about Huma Abedin and her spouse, Wiener?
Well, it's not about her exclusively, and I can't give too much away. But suffice it to say, she is mentioned in the material.
Oh, really?
That's an exclusive. Nobody's been told that yet. So.
Oh, okay. Do we dare ask if you have a name for it?
No. No, you
nope,
can't tell.
Can't ask? We can't ask. Okay.
You can ask, yeah, but I can't tell you.
Okay, well, then I won't waste my breath. But I will
but you'll
do
know
this.
In time. It'll be out.
Okay, when it's out, then you're going to come on and talk about it, right?
Absolutely. It's a lot of explosive stuff, too.
Absolutely. Well, while I mentioned the go zones, I went over there today at Shoebat, and I seen several different articles that I really wanted to bring up with you, but we might as well do this one, seeing how I already brought her up. The title to your article over there is Huma Set to Do to Hillary What Wiener Did to Huma.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really...
That's true. Well, we know that that Wienergate 1.0, which started in the summer of 2011, helped to bring to light, in fact, it prompted our work into the background of his wife, Huma Abedin, the Muslim Brotherhood daughter. And in subsequent months and years now, we had a year later, we had Michelle Bachmann bring this work to the attention of the media and to Congress in the summer of 2012. And then in the spring of 2013, it was Huma who successfully rehabilitated Wiener's image and began the campaign for him to become mayor. That started in the spring of 2013, but by July of 2013, when he was actually the front runner in the mayoral race in New York City,
right.
Wienergate 2.0 hit. This was the infamous sexting exchanges with Sidney Leathers and such, and this torpedoed not only his campaign, but more important, it torpedoed Huma's chance to become the first lady of the city that was hit on 9/11. And as a Muslim Brotherhood daughter, that would have been quite the feather in her cap. So when I say Huma set to do to Hillary what Wiener did to Huma, Wiener torpedoed Huma's chance to become First Lady of New York. And what may happen here, and I'm not predicting this, but the table is being set, so to speak, is that Huma may do to Hillary what was done to her. In that, look, it has been incubating. I don't know if you've noticed. It's almost been on a slow boil. There's been, since the Huma scandal broke in 2011, it's a story that people continue to have interest in. I mean, not the mainstream media or the liberal media, but folks such as yourself. And I run into people all the time that whenever you bring up the Huma story, and I'm talking about her Muslim Brotherhood connections, people are genuinely interested in it. And it's a story that never gets boring because it's so explosive. And I think that in the years that have transpired since, I think what we have seen is a growing interest and as a consequence of that, greater awareness on a much more much broader level of who she is. And I think that as that continues and as she comes into the spotlight for a presidential run with Hillary, I mean, she would essentially be Hillary's Valerie Jarrett. So
yeah.
What we saw at the State of the Union speech the other night was Obama essentially gave a not so subtle endorsement to Elizabeth Warren for 2016 when he said, we need to turn the page, and I read an article in the Huffington Post where they read it the same way, they interpreted it the same way, and I began thinking about this and saying, well, I know that there's personal animosity and acrimony between the Obamas and the Clintons, but Barack Obama is extremely Muslim Brotherhood friendly. And in fact, he stood up for Huma Abedin back in the summer of 2012 when she was kind of a lightning rod. Her Muslim Brotherhood connections finally breached the mainstream media firewall. And I think that his support for Warren now over essentially Huma Abedin, because look, if Abedin is going to be Hillary's Valerie Jarrett, Valerie Jarrett is running the White House. So Obama has decided, if he is going with Warren, he has decided that he doesn't want to put his support behind a Huma in the White House.
Right.
And the reason I began thinking, well, maybe it has to do with all of this baggage and all of this stuff that's coming out about Abedin, and
right.
and if that could play a role in his not endorsing her or not endorsing Hillary and getting behind Warren.
Right, right. It just, you sit there and, well, I agree with you, this story does grow and many more people know about Huma now. I mean, because I remember when you first broke, I don't know if you broke it on this program, but you sure talked about it on this program. And, we talked about it several times and it was like, what, a year later or more before somebody actually took notice of it and, brought it forward. But I do know now that Wiener's name is so commonplace that, just about, you watch on Fox News when a TV person brings up the name, they usually about die on the spot because they can't even say his name. But point being is it just depends on how far the left will go to protect it. I believe if the left decides that they don't want Hillary and they want Elizabeth Warren, it's going to be, I think they'll probably succeed in covering it up.
I do too. I think that there is some definite fear. There's some definite concern, I believe, that we're not being told about and they're not going to come out and admit it. But I think that there's plenty. I mean, if you just compare what will be known about Abedin in the 2016 nomination process compared to what was known about Valerie Jarrett in 2008, I think there's a lot more known about Huma, and I think there's some legitimate risk there for the left and for the mainstream media. And it was Huma that pushed Anthony Weiner. According to the New York Times, it was Huma that wanted him to be elected mayor more than he did. And I think we may even be seeing some of that, although there's been no reports of it. But Hillary strikes me as worn out, and she said it herself. And I think Huma may be more interested in Hillary becoming president than Hillary is. It's quite possible. I think she is worn out. She's you can tell that
you have to look at
much left in the tank.
Look, you have to look at who and where money comes from. And who's backing her? Look, Huma has walked lockstep with her through this whole process, so to speak. And she is Muslim Brotherhood. And their whole goal for the United States is they need to have Obama was a big plus for them. Amen. But they need it to continue on. Because Americans are now, with the new terrorist attacks, that like on Paris and things, are starting to get more aware of, well, hey, the world is going back towards Islamism, whatever, you know what I mean. And so we're becoming more aware. And so they really need to get their agenda across. They need to have Hillary in there because I think that she is their puppet.
Yeah, no, Evan, there's no doubt about it, and I think that, there's another scandal about Huma that I think a lot of people are unaware of, and it's actually coming to the forefront, and it may be the one that causes the most damage because it's not as charged, but it does have to do with illegal activity. And Senator Charles Grassley first brought this up back in the summer of 2013. In fact, I always found this very interesting. The letter that he sent to Secretary of State John Kerry at the time, inquiring about Huma Abedin's time as a special government employee in 2012, was dated 1 year to the day after Bachman's letter. Bachman sent her letter to the IG at the State Department asking about Huma Abedin and other people on June 13th, 2012. Grassley sent his letter to John Kerry about Abedin on June 13th, 2013. And it struck me at the time as almost a, was this a subtle message that he was aware of the previous instance or the previous letter by Bachman? But this scandal has to do with when Huma went on maternity leave in December of 2011.
Right.
She came back to work on June 4th of 2012. And this, as you know, was just less than 2 weeks prior to Bachman's letter. And what happened was, according to the State Department, Huma began work as a special government employee on June 4th. She left her job as deputy chief of staff and began work as a special government employee for the State Department from June 4th until February 1st. When Hillary left office. Now, that is a span of 240 days.
Right.
But the problem is that when you are in the employ of an executive or legislative branch of government, you cannot work as an SGE for more than 130 days. And there have been Freedom of Information Act requests submitted for more information about this for a long time now, and the State Department has been stonewalling this. And I think they're going to find themselves in a real pickle on this one, because Huma actually, in response to the letter to Kerry, actually sent a letter to her attorney who included that letter in his response to Grassley. And that letter, Huma admitted, just out and out admitted, that she started work as an SGE on June 4th through February 1st, which is a violation of the law. I mean, just plain and
right.
simple, it's inescapable. So that's going to be interesting to see how that pans out, too.
Well, see, but it shows in that, knowing that the law was there, the law was violated, it shows them giving special privilege because they want her as an advisor. Why? Because she, what does she represent? She represents the Muslim Brotherhood, right?
Right. Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, she definitely a Muslim Brotherhood connected. I mean, she comes from a Muslim Brotherhood family. She's a Muslim Brotherhood daughter, no doubt
yeah.
about it.
Well, let me go this for real quick for the people. Folks, if you want to, if you don't know the whole story about Huma Abedin and all this, just go back in the radio archives and you can find programs that Ben and I did, or Ben, of course, did most of the talking and the information getting, so I guess I have to include him. Anyway, programs that talked all about this, and so you ought to go back and listen to those programs if you haven't heard them. It's really interesting chain of thought. Well, I don't know what's going to – go ahead, back to you.
Well, there's also another aspect to this. As you know, not to introduce another figure, but I think it is potentially relevant when you talk about this SGE issue. When she was an SGE, she actually went to work for the Clinton Foundation. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. She
right.
was an employee of the State Department and started work for as an SGE, and one of her clients was the Clinton Foundation, which is Hillary's husband. I mean, and that foundation was, and it included the, or that was one of her clients, but the firm that she worked for was Teneo, T-E-N-E-O, which is a mm-hmm. consultant firm. And that firm was headed by Douglas Band, who was a very close and trusted advisor to President Bill Clinton during his time in office. But all of that to say, and you hit on it, as far as her Muslim Brotherhood connections. This administration, through Malik Obama, Barack Obama's brother, we know that it has backdated documents to protect certain individuals. So when it backdated, i.e. Lois Lerner, backdated Malik Obama's tax-exempt status more than what's legally allowed, that set a precedent. It set a precedent that says that this administration is not above illegally backdating documents. So I would ask, and I'm not saying this, but what I would ask is that should we not find out if Huma's status as an SGE was backdated and that she didn't really start on June 4th? I don't have that. I'm not making that assertion, but I think that that needs to be eliminated as a possibility because there are two events that took place.
Okay, we got to stop. We got to stop. We got less than 30 seconds for a break. Where can we find you nowadays?
You can. I still contribute at shoebot.com, and I also have a site that I co-write articles with another radio show host at wbdaily.com.
W what?
WBDaily, as in worldbeatdaily.com.
Folks, check him out, and we'll be back in 3 minutes.
Don't go away. Pastor Dan will be right back. Few things in this world are more important than clean, pure water. Understanding this, ABR makes 4 tabletop water distillers available to you for purchase. First, we have the 5.5 hour per gallon with polycarbonate collection jug for $139. The second is a 5.5 hour per gallon with glass collection jug for $189. The third is a 3.5 hour per gallon with polycarbonate collection jug for $189. And our premier tabletop distiller is a 3.5 hour per gallon with glass collection jug for $250. All our distillers have a stainless steel boiling pot, dome, and cooling tubes. And the premier version also has a splash flap to protect against contamination of the cooling tubes. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com for more information and protect your water supply.
Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Closed, unemployment insurance running out, jobs leaving the country. Many people cannot afford to eat or keep a roof over their head. Too many can do neither. Messiah's Branch has a mission church in Wichita, Kansas that helps the victims of this banker's economy, the American people, your neighbors. The mission is the last hope for so many Americans. We need your help to lift up the poorest of the poor. These are men, women, and children who once had homes, now in the street. They all need what you need. First aid, beds, food, clothing, and so on. You can send a monetary gift or a box of necessities to 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 6651, or donate online by going to WichitaHomeless.com, or simply call 316-619-4886. 316-619-4886.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
We are back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin. You're listening to Mission Watch Live on the American Voice Radio Network. Well, folks, please remember to pray tonight about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. You know, right now, people are out there recovering from from the holidays. People are still recovering from the holidays. They bought presents, and you know as well as I do, holidays cost more, and a lot of people go into debt. And a lot of people figure, well, we'll pull out of it income tax time. Well, for income tax, with most people, it comes a little earlier because they get to do it electronically nowadays and don't wait, you know, as long for a mailed out check, you know. But it's like a desert for us during that period of time because, you know, donations start dropping off really bad by December. And we don't, until people start getting their income tax back, you know, we really have a tough time, like we're having right now. And I'm not going to tell you, hey, donate some certain amount of money and you can be my partner, you know, and all that like a lot of these people out there do. Or if you mail me a donation, I'm going to send you a CD or something like that. I'm not going to say any of that. What I'm going to say is that you need to pray about it. You know, the best kind of gift is given to someone that can't pay you back. I can't pay you back. The homeless can't pay you back. The homeless won't even know where it's coming from. And so that kind of a donation, you'll be blessed for. Will you be blessed on earth? I'm not going to say if you donate so much money, you're going to receive all the blessings in the world and you'll be all right if you just donate money. I ain't going to say that either. I will say that your reward will come in another place. But the biggest reward is because it's the right thing to do. You know, helping people that can't help themselves is the right thing to do. And, you know, folks, we are our brother's keepers. I ask that question, you know, are we our brother keepers? Of course we are our brother's keepers. And so pray about it. I always say that charity starts first at your home and those around you. But pray about supporting Wichita Mission Church. You know, we've been doing this for 15 years. Well, it'll be 15 years exactly come June. We've been doing it for a very long time. You know, and so we even have the agencies tell their employees to come to our, tell their employees to tell the people about the Potter's Little Mission at Church. People have millions of dollars in their budget, send people to a place that has no budget. People wanted to know about mercy. You know, well, we've always stepped out in faith and did things. And my wife and I were talking about that. And so, you know, we've been waiting to try to get funding from Wichita to open up Mercy. But, you know, we decided to step out ahead. And so we're looking for four pregnant women. We have a woman for a house mother, but we're looking for three pregnant women that we want to house in Mercy to start. We're already housing one woman already. She didn't have a job. She was kicked out by her children. Just when she moved to Wichita, she became a nurse practitioner. But she was kicked out of her children's house and was going to have to leave the city. And we helped her out. We put her in a place, and it took her a while to get her licensing and everything, so on and so forth. Well, now she is paying her own bills, and we don't charge her rent or anything. But I think she also paid for the bills on one of the other apartments in which we house our maintenance man and another man that helps out in the ministry. So we're really housing three people right now at Mercy. We're hoping within, as soon as my wife gets the gas company out there to get a gas meter in, that'll be before the winter overflow closes. We are going to have it ready for pregnant women, and that's just a start. But so we're stepping ahead with Mercy, and so you can pray about that. If you go to prophecyhour.com, you can find a link to Mercy, or you go to wichitahomeless.com, you can find a link to Mercy if you want to donate to that. But we need your support. We really do. We don't have a big, huge congregation of rich people that can donate 10%. You know, we minister to the poor. The poor can't pay for it. They help out in other ways, like sweeping the floor and so on and so forth. But they don't have the money to support what we do. It's people like you on radio that can do it and has did it for these last few years, or for 15 years. So pray about it. Also, I need your help with airtime. You know, airtime costs money, and I'm still a little behind in airtime. So pray about making a donation for airtime if you're blessed by these programs. Well, I better sign this off, or Ben will fall asleep over there. So you can donate online or by mailing a check or money order, and you can find all the information at prophecyhour.com, or simply call me at 620-878-4682. And now we're back with Ben Barrick, and I don't know what he's going to finish this program up with. Are you there, Ben?
I'm right here.
Oh, come to think of it, we mentioned the go zones. If you're done with Huma, yeah, we need to address that issue, I guess.
Real quick, if I could round out what I was talking about.
Go ahead. You can take 10 more minutes if you want.
Just real quick. The issue of backdating, there were two incidents that happened after Huma allegedly began her work as an SGE on June 4th. Of 2012. One was the letter from Bachman on June 13th, and the other was the Benghazi attacks themselves. So that was going to be interesting to see how all of that unfolded and how she got that gig as an SGE, which would have been preferable to her being a deputy chief of staff when both of those things happened. Now, as far as the no-go zones you were talking about. Yeah, I mean, it is a distinction without a difference. I mean, this thing kind of blew up when Steve Emerson on Fox News said that all of Birmingham in the UK was essentially a no-go zone. Did he misspeak? Yes. Is he inaccurate with that statement? Yes. But there are absolutely areas in Birmingham and throughout Great Britain and France where there are Islamic thugs demanding the enforcement of Sharia law. I don't know about you, but I seem to remember back in as long ago as 2005, where like 900 cars were set afire in France.
Yeah.
In these no-go zones, these absolutely exist, and the fact that people are even debating this issue is absurd. I saw that the mayor of France, I don't know what this woman's name is, but she's a wacko bird. I think her name is Hidalgo, Mayor Anne Hidalgo. Yeah, she was on with Christian Amanpour of CNN, the Muslim apologist and far left liberal wacko. And she said that she was going to sue Fox News for these no-go zone comments. And I'm just thinking of myself, as I saw this, I'm going, wait a minute, lady. You're considering suing a news channel, a news network that's not even in your country, and over these comments of these no-go zones, which are true. I mean, you know, you do have a problem over there in France. And you're going to threaten to sue Fox. I tell you what, here's an idea, lady. How about instead of threatening to sue Fox News over comments about no-go zones that do exist, how about you address the real problem? How about you address these no-go zones and you address Muslim infiltration, Islamic infiltration of your city? This kind of thing drives me up a tree. Pastor Dan, because this proves that this woman has no business, or should I say, no business, being in a position of mayor of any city, let alone France. This is when leaders and failures are revealed. Just as Neville Chamberlain was revealed as a failure, not a leader. He was the Prime Minister of Great Britain at the time of the Nazis, and he had to submit his resignation so that Winston Churchill would take over. That is where we are with these people. And the idea...
Let me... Go ahead. I don't want to throw something in.
Well, real quick, the idea that this woman is going to basically confront a non-threat as the real threat is gathering reveals a lot. It shows that she is using a psychological defense mechanism known as displacement. There are 15 psychological defense mechanisms. Here's the definition of displacement. You tell me if this is what she's using. This is called the directing of thoughts, feelings, and impulses directed at one person or object, but taken out upon another person or object. People often use displacement when they cannot express their feelings in a safe manner to the person they are directed at. That is what she is doing. These people are using psychological defense mechanisms because they're ill-prepared, inadequate, and not qualified to perform their duties. They must go.
Yeah.
This woman should be booted out of her whatever position she's in.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go with this. Did you enjoy – how did you – hit you with Obama's response? I mean, you know, I guess the whole world should – follow that. His response to the Paris thing was that they ought to treat their Muslim people nicer so they assimilate into their country. How about that?
Well, there we go. I mean, this guy is embracing. Look, there are three different ways. I think that you can. We're seeing three different behaviors from political leaders when it comes to this issue. You have the Mayor Anne Hidalgo Wackoberg behavior, which is to use displacement. It's appeasement, it's cowardice, whatever you want to call it. You have David Cameron, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, who is a dimmy. You have Angela Merkel in Germany, who is siding against the anti-Islamization people. You have these appeasers. Those are the people, and you have François Hollande, the leader of France, the commie pinko socialist Marxist wacko, who did not allow Marine Le Pen, the anti-Islamization candidate, political leader, who is gaining all kinds of support in France, did not allow her to participate in the Paris rally, but allowed the Prime Minister of Turkey to participate, which is just mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. So you have the appeasers that I mentioned, the world leaders, Cameron, Hollande, Tony Abbott in Australia, there's this woman in Paris. And then you have the political leaders, politicians like Geert Wilders in the Netherlands and Marine Le Pen in France. They represent another strand. They represent the second strand of politicians and leaders. They are actually confronting the issue. And then you have the people like Obama. This man is embracing. He's embracing these movements. He's embracing the Muslim Brotherhood. That's what he's doing. And he's leading our country. That's scary.
Yeah, let me hear. I got something for you, and I want your reaction to this, and I'm glad I'm able to get it in here. I just seen an article at WorldNet Daily, and it was done in January 20th. I'm not sure who wrote it, but let me read you just a little bit of it. It says, the Obama White House and the State Department, under the management of Secretary of State of who? Hillary Clinton, changed sides in the war on terror in 2011. By implementing a policy of facilitating the delivery of weapons to the al-Qaeda-dominated rebels in Libya attempting to oust Muammar Gaddafi from power. Basically, they made Christopher Stevens the first envoy to Al-Qaeda. We were given guns to Al-Qaeda, endorsed by Obama and Hillary Clinton. Didn't you point to that a long time ago?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's been a while. And I think that, I believe that article is written by Jerome Corsi, who wrote another article a couple days earlier that calls into question the integrity of the Benghazi Select Committee and whether or not it's been compromised. Well, we had a huge red flag on that committee back in May when the executive director of that committee was named as Philip Keiko. I mean, you could do a whole show on his background, but they're very disturbing facts about his background, who he's represented, how long he's been in Washington, who he worked for in Congress, his participation in the writing of the Patriot Act. But you know, that article that you're talking about and the one prior to it also identifies the eight leaders of Congress who would have been briefed on this weapons trafficking operation you're talking about.
Right.
One of those members is John Boehner. So John Boehner is the House Speaker who appointed Trey Gowdy to lead the committee to investigate Benghazi. Now, all of that right there, all by itself, tells you all you need to know, which is why people at this level have to be of unimpeachable character. Because after them, there's no one to hold them accountable as far as the hierarchy goes. I mean, because you're talking about the highest levels of power in the country. So once they become corrupt, there's nobody to keep them in check. And that's why those people in those positions cannot be corrupted. And the only thing that's left is the people. And that's the only check that these people have, these corrupt officials have. But if those, and I believe that these are correct. I believe that it's correct that there were eight leaders of Congress, John Boehner among them, that received this information, that know the truth about Benghazi. And in fact, this implicates Mike Rogers, the House Intelligence Committee chairman until recently, who decided to retire and take on a career in talk radio with a wonderful tagline called Something to Think About. That is going to be the most boring, ponderous radio show you've ever heard in your life. And I would encourage all of your listeners, Pastor Dan, to find out where Mike Rogers is doing his show and call into that show and start asking some serious questions about Benghazi.
Let me butt in a minute. That's a good idea. When he gets started and you find out where it's at, we'll come on. I'll bring you on and we'll talk about it, and we'll encourage people to ask questions. That'll be fun, you know.
Well, and I think that he's going to need to pay his call screener one heck of a lot of big salary.
Well, there's a way to get around those call screeners, you know.
Yeah, 10 minute delays.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. I was going to ask you about something else, and my mind went blank after you brought him up. That's funny.
As far as the article you're talking about and switching sides, I think that's a simplification, because frankly, Pastor Dan, I think we switched sides back as early as 1995. I think that we switched sides during the Clinton administration. George W. Bush carried on the practice, and most amazingly, did so after 9/11, and Barack Obama has just kicked it all into overdrive. So to say that we switched sides in 2011, I think is an oversimplification. I think this has been a gradual progression. Since Bill Clinton welcomed the chairman of the Dar al-Hidra Mosque, which was home to 9/11 hijacker and Anwar al-Awlaki, since he invited the chairman of that mosque into the White House.
I think 2011 is a big understatement. You know, it has been going on, and I do believe that. You know, I think that Bush was totally surprised about 9/11 for the mere fact that they were appeasing them. You know what I mean? They were even offered. Clinton was offered Bin Laden. You know, way back. You know, and he was, no, we don't want him. Point being is I think what they don't understand is there's more than one type of Islam, you know, one that can be friend with like the people in Saudi Arabia who they appease all the time, and then the other ones that they can't control like ISIS.
Right. Well, we began with a fatally flawed strategy in 1993 in the wake of the first World Trade Center attack, the bombing. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at this a couple of weeks ago, and something jumped out at me as I was doing it. There were two, actually, after that bombing, the Clinton administration began a practice that has continued to this day. And that practice is to treat acts of war in the form of terrorism as criminal acts and to prosecute them. Now, if in the case of the first World Trade Center bombing, after that bombing, soon thereafter, it was learned that there was a Day of Terror landmarks plot that was supposed to take down, you know, the United Nations building and the Holland Tunnel and all kinds of other things. That was a plot hatched by the blind sheikh, and that plot was busted up and that they prosecuted those involved. Now, get this. There were 10 defendants in that trial, mm-hmm. and there were 172 unindicted co-conspirators. Does that mean that because they were unindicted, they're innocent? Heck no. They were probably all guilty and deserving of harsh punishment. But 172 went free while 10 were convicted. So that's one case. Then when you fast forward to 2008 with the Holy Land Foundation trial, which took place under the George W. Bush administration, the largest terrorism financing trial in the history of this country. It was like over 100 counts against 8 defendants and 316 unindicted co-conspirators. One of the unindicted co-conspirators in that trial was also an unindicted co-conspirator in the World Trade Center bomb, Day of Terror trial, Landmarks trial. And he was also an imam at the Dar al-Hijra Mosque, the one I was telling you about earlier. So add it all up. You have two trials of terrorism trials. The first one, which had 172 unindicted co-conspirators, do you know who one of those unindicted co-conspirators was?
No.
Osama bin Laden.
Really?
You add those 172 to the 316, you have 478 unindicted co-conspirators, and you have 18 convicted. That's a formula for disaster.
Yeah.
I don't know what other examples we need to say, wait a minute, we need to totally overhaul how we're dealing with this.
Well, you know, we're at the point that, you know, if Americans don't wake up, they are going to successfully have made this a Muslim nation. I mean, you see it everywhere, and it goes on everywhere, and it's more and more and more, and they consistently shut Christians up. The people that should be speaking up, you know, like the Christian church, are not opening their mouths. Their preachers have somehow glued their mouths shut, I guess. And so we're just going off the edge of a cliff. So for, having said that, do you see any hope at all in the presidential election? Who would you say has a chance?
The field on the Republican side is so big that it is so difficult to tell. On one hand, it's a good thing. And on another hand, it could be a recipe for what we saw in 2012, where the establishment picked its candidate early and was able to coalesce all of the establishment voters around that candidate in Romney, while the conservative candidates were many in number but it was it just kept bouncing around from flavor of the week, one
right.
to the next, and it completely splintered that vote. Now, in this coming 2016, what we're seeing shape up is three establishment candidates that may end up duking it out, that may, I stress the word may, do the same thing to the establishment.
Who's the third? Who's the third? We got Romney, Bush.
You have Romney, you have Jeb Bush, and you have Chris Christie.
Oh, Chris Christie. I didn't even include Fat Boy. I'm sorry. You know,
Christie Cream.
Yeah, exactly. The Obama lover. You know, no, I didn't even consider him. If I could pick somebody out and put him there, I don't know, just right offhand, top of my head, I'd probably pick Mike Huckabee. And that's because he, you know, the minister background. And I've listened to him on Fox News for a year, and I like his ideas. But anyway, we're running out of time. We're going to have to do this again, not so far in between as last time. Tell them about WB Daily, what they can find over there, and we'll get out of here.
Yeah, I do radio show with a guy called Lynn Woolley. He's been in the business for years. He's worked at the WFAA in Dallas and other places. He's a seasoned radio veteran and an excellent writer. He and I work WBDaily.com, and I also contribute at Shoebot.com.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Shoebot's pretty popular. Folks, go over there at WBDaily.com, and you'll find wherever you find a link to this radio program. If you're listening to it in a podcast later on tonight, this link will be there. Well, Ben, thanks for being with me. I love you, brother, and we'll do it again. Be blessed.
Back at you, Pastor Dan. Take care.
All right. Okay, folks. Yeah, WBDaily.com. I only got about a minute, but folks, remember, always be a blessing to others and pray about supporting the Wichita Mission Church and radio airtime. We really could use your help tonight. If you can do it electronically, that'd be a great thing, but you can mail a check or money order. In the meantime, remember, there is only one God. He is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for our repented sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. So, Lord our God, Father, King of the universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses and keeps you, and his face shines upon you, and is gracious to you, and gives you peace. Like no one or nothing else can. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.